When did the great shock start? In the transparent reality, waves of walls of fear rolling through the psyche. What we can't live with lives with us anyway. Soul melting into confusion. What does this fusion mean? Then look what we did. Replaying yesterday's scenes, we broke every promise and spilled all our dreams. A sinner needs to sin, going back again and again. Who got more than they wanted? Who wanted more than they got?
Behind the hurt is a demon to deal with.
The wars of scars, we don't mean for it to happen. It just happens when the past won't stay past. Don't let them see the pain, or they'll be back for more. The brink of madness laughs and enjoys the show.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
K282BH, Philomer, on 104.3 FM.
And K220HR, Hood River, on 91.9 FM.
And streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Volunteer-powered community radio.
KBOO.
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 We know a KBOO community membership is at the top of everyone's wish list this season. Give the gift of supporting grassroots community media by making a donation during KBOO's Catalog of Connections campaign now through December 31st. Our $75,000 goal will go towards everyone's favorite music, news, and public affairs programming all year long. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thank you and happy holidays.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. This show today is being broadcast during KBOO's Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, where we are giving the gift of grassroots community media. Now, help us as a station reach our goal of $75,000 before December 31st. You can just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO at 44321. Thank you. We need your support and hope you chip in. Now, before we begin today's conversation, if you are troubled by discussions of suicide, you may want to skip this episode since that is the subject of today's show. Suicide is the 11th leading cause of death in the U.S., but help is available and can come in many forms. Today on Pathways, we look at the power of art to educate, connect, express, and heal. Our guest is Dr. Diane Kaufman, the founder and director of the Hold On Campaign for Suicide Prevention. She is a poet, artist, internationally award-winning lyricist, humanism and medicine awardee, and retired child psychiatrist with over 40 years of clinical experience. Diane is also herself a suicide attempt and suicide loss survivor with bipolar 2 disorder. Her story, Bird That Wants to Fly, inspired an opera and is narrated by actor Danny Glover. She is dedicated to transforming trauma and despair into life-affirming creativity. Dr. Kaufman has extensive training and experience in the therapeutic use of poetry and story, and is also a certified expressive arts educational facilitator. She has just launched the Talking Back to Suicide podcast to share lessons learned from invited guests, lived mental experiences, and expertise from invited guest healthcare providers. Diane resides in Portland, Oregon. Well, hello, Diane, and welcome to the Pathway Show.
Oh, thank you so much. Glad to be with you.
Now, leaving your personal story aside for a minute, let's start by asking a general question that probably is more relevant in the state of Oregon than most places in America, and that is, does suicide ever, in your opinion, make sense for anybody?
I'm taking a heavy sigh there because it's a deep question. I think that it's most important for someone who's having suicidal thoughts to share them, right, with someone, and in addition to where that's appropriate and safe to do so. I think that someone who's having suicidal thoughts ought to be in touch perhaps with their primary care provider or a mental health professional to fully discuss the reasons why the person is in that state of mind. I'm in no way going to, in a sense, answer that question directly because it's an individual matter. There may be situations where a person is experiencing extreme physical pain or they have a health condition which is extremely impacting their life, that for which there is no cure. However, I think that it needs to be discussed, right, fully with someone who can form a connection with that person and can help them to make the best of decisions.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. But I'm just curious, what is your personal philosophy about death? I mean, do you believe that life is inherently worth living, even in the face of chronic suffering or a hopeless fate like a terminal illness? I mean, is opposition to euthanasia based on religious doctrines? Are we religiously obligated to hang on for dear life no matter what? And I'm just asking your opinion.
Again, complicated, complex questions.
I know. We're famous for that here on Pathway.
Yes, sure. Well, do you know, I recently wrote something about this, right? And it had to do with why should I be alive? Or in fact, I'm in the process of looking for a voice actor for this, and it'll become an animation. But it talks about why should I be alive? And then it goes, because God wants me to. And then it goes, but I don't believe in God.
Right.
Then it goes, you know, like to not add to sadness, loss, and despair in the world, right? To add an ounce of kindness to the world, is that enough? And it's asking questions about what is enough to have a reason to live, right?
Right.
And then it's talking about Are those reasons ever enough? And tell me, it's almost having a conversation. Tell me, why shouldn't I kill myself? Why should I live another day? Right. And the piece ends with the person who's thinking this, they're saying, "Why? Tell me, why shouldn't I kill myself and die by suicide?" And then it says, "A voice arises, right? You are needed more than you can ever say or know." And I felt in writing this that that voice, perhaps, is almost a spiritual creative force, a life force, almost asking, saying like, that we ask these questions, but maybe we can never find out those answers. Part of the piece is also, do I have to justify being alive, or can I just live? You know, is that enough, right? And that idea of that you're needed more beyond what you could ever say, like articulate, or know, like understand, which I thought the piece was interesting, right?
Yeah, it sounds like it. You know, it's like, well, who are we to play God and make a decision that life is not meaningful just because we can't figure it out?
There's, you know, the poet Emily Dickinson wrote one of her poems is, if something like, if I could help one bird, right, back to its nest again, if I can help one broken heart. And then the end of the poem says, I shall not have lived in vain. And the poem is talking about doing one thing, one bird, not 100 birds or 1,000 birds, one bird. And I was thinking about that poem, and I was wondering, gee, I wonder if Emily was grappling with being in despair, right, about her life, and and seeing if her life had any meaning. And that was poetically what she came up with.
So you've been open about your personal experience with a suicide attempt and a mm-hmm. diagnosis of bipolar disorder. If you don't mind, I'm just curious, what did your suicidal ideation sound like? What were you telling yourself?
Yeah.
And how long ago was this?
Oh, this was, I'm 71 now, and this happened when I was in medical school, which uh-huh. was in my, I guess, my late 20s.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was keeping a journal of poetry that I was writing then. And I still have that journal. And in my own handwriting, I'm writing about, there's one poem that goes, on my birthday, they gave a lecture about depression. And I wondered what it was like to be or be not. And then there's more of the poem. And in the corner, bottom right corner of the page, it says suicidal ideations from life's frustrations. There's another poem that starts off, I am flotsam floating away from shipwreck. Then there's another poem, which it might have been I was just in a buoyant up mood, or who knows, I was getting a little hypomanic. The poem is about the, quote, mad leaves falling from the sky and asking them to teach me to fly. And then there's a poem, which I believe, although I don't have a full memory of this, I believe this was shortly before I attempted suicide. And the poem is really full of beyond despair. It starts off, like, I'm worthless, I'm ugly, no one has ever loved me, no one will ever love me. It's everything is absolutely not true, right? But definitively stated, like, that's a fact. I'm ugly, I'm worthless, I'm nothing. That's all in the poem.
Right.
And then in part of the poem is, it goes if I tell you what's going on, like, I can't do that because I'll have to hide once more. So it's encapsulated of emptiness, hopelessness. And I think also there was like self-loathing.
Right. And do you attribute this to your childhood yeah. upbringing or to the rigors of medical school? Or is there some causative factor that you could point to that's external? or that conditioned your psychology?
There's probably a little drops of each of those in there. I don't think growing up that I developed a strength in asking for help.
You're saying you did not develop that strength.
Yeah, I did not develop a strength in asking for help. I was developing a strength for giving help, but not being strong enough to ask for help. I believe that there were biological aspects of what was happening to me in terms of later being diagnosed with bipolar II disorder. I had a paternal uncle, my father's brother, who in his adulthood had a psychotic break, depression and a psychotic break. He was hospitalized at Bellevue. He had ECT. And he was a lawyer, a very flamboyant man. I wonder about his life if he might have had bipolar disorder in terms of what had happened to him. I had on my mother's side, my aunt, who was also an artist and a poet, she in her older years, she really decompensated to the point of she was living in a single occupancy room near the Metropolitan's Opera House. She was paranoid. She was just in a bad way. She was not a homeless person, but I recall one time with my family going to a restaurant near the Opera House because we were going to go to the opera. And my aunt came, she lived near there. She came into the restaurant and she was acting quickly. And the way she looked was so not okay in her presentation that the owner of the restaurant asked her to leave the restaurant.
I see.
And so there was psychiatric illness on both sides of my family.
I see. So, but you make the point that a person who has suicidal ideation or suicidal behavior does not always have a psychiatric illness at all.
That is true. That is absolutely true. So, on the one hand, there could be someone who has a severe depression, a bipolar disorder, severe anxiety, psychosis. And within those illnesses, there could be a potentially an increased risk of suicidal thinking and behaviors. But a person could, tragically also, they're a teenager who's being bullied.
Right.
Bullying. There could be someone who has been raped, domestic violence, relationship failures, financial devastation, a job loss. There could be external factors that are going on, which not one thing alone, but that thing in combination with other events or personality factors, or lack of social support or lack of awareness of what's going on. And then another factor is having a weapon, having a gun and having life stressors, whatever they may be. If you have that gun, you're at increased risk of killing yourself.
Amazing. You know, isn't this a great, I mean, considering that gun owners are some of the highest category of people who commit suicide, isn't this a great argument for better gun control?
Well, absolutely. More people kill themselves with the gun than is used to kill other people.
I know. It's just amazing. You know, there was a comic called Jim Jeffries he's from Australia, and he does a number on gun control. And he talks about the illusion that, well, this is going to protect me and my family. As opposed to, well, you might be having a bad day, and everybody's got a bad day once in a while, and it's pretty funny, but it's kind of sad too.
You know, Paul, another thing I'd like to bring up is, whereas sometimes the suicidal thinking can be either ongoing or it's been happening for a week or two, right, leading up to the suicide attempt. But there are also times when the suicidal thinking is like the light switch. Suddenly, within seconds, the person is thinking this way.
Right. And like you point out,
yeah.
I was going to say, like you point out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it could be a reaction to severe stress that's been happening over time, relationship issues, financial problems, or just trauma from having been abused and that kind of thing. And you point out in the book that the people who are most prone to commit suicide have come to a point where they see no way out other than killing themselves. They just feel trapped, or maybe they're just reacting impulsively. You know, it's pretty incredible. What about countries like I understand Switzerland. Anybody can go there if they have enough resources. They can go there and arrange for doctor-assisted suicide, whether they're terminally ill or not. Do you know anything about that? How did they justify that? Or what is their attitude? It's way different.
I don't know that much about that. And I forget what country this is, but there was an article recently about this. The idea of if you want to kill yourself, you don't have to. I'm saying you should undergo an evaluation and get help. But in this particular country, if you're wanting to kill yourself, you can kill yourself. You know, the difficulty with that, and I'm talking about the individual where maybe a few hours later, a day later, 2 days later, they change their mind. They still want to be alive, right?
Right.
There's a documentary about a young man who had jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge, and he survived it.
Wow.
And he's now a suicide prevention advocate. But he talks about as he was jumping or falling, in his mind, he was thinking, oh, my God, what have I just done?
Yeah. What age group is most at risk for this kind of behavior?
It's older white men have the highest.
Older white men. I'm the target audience.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But I also want to say that there are increased risk groups, right? So Native Americans, Alaska, right? Natives, African Americans, the LGBTQ plus community, transgender. These are at increased risk.
Of course, they're so marginalized.
And of course, we talk about teenagers. Right?
Yeah, tell me, let's talk about teenagers. What's happening with teenagers? Is it mostly boys or girls or what?
I'd have to check the statistics on this, but it could be completed suicides. It might be, again, I need to check the statistics, or is male greater than female, with female having more attempts. However, there was an article recently, again, in the New York Times, published of most recent data, but I don't know if that most recent data was for adults or it also included youth.
Right.
But it ended up that it was equivalent between the two. And the reason why it seemed was that more females were turning to using guns to kill themselves.
Wow, what a trip. So what you referred to something in your book as suicide lies, where our thinking gets distorted by things that we're telling ourselves or things that we've been told. What are some of these suicide lies?
Sure. So in terms of those lies, it can be my pain is going to last forever. Time gets distorted, right? There's no sense of a future. And the future being Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe if I took a walk or took a shower or called a friend, right, or watched a movie I like, maybe somehow I'm going to feel a little bit different, a little bit better.
Well, that sounds like depression to me.
Yeah, there's only this excruciating moment. There's no memory of, in some situations, like I have felt this way before, right?
Right.
And
right.
I have somehow gotten through this before, or right. No problem. What I was trying to say before, but I didn't articulate it the best way, is that there's no sense of problem solving. Instead of, oh my goodness, I feel terrible, I need to do something, right?
Right.
All the problem solving is shut down. Right.
Right.
There can also be the idea of no one or nothing can help me. So
right.
Instead of reaching out for help or doing something to help oneself, it's like all that, you know, is shut down.
Right. Okay. So now we only have a couple minutes left, but I want to get to the expressive arts, because this is kind of a specialized remedy that you offer. So what are the expressive arts, and how do they play a role, and how can they play a role in suicide prevention?
So, you know, part of the difficulty has to do with being able to express thinking, right? And
able to express what?
Express our thoughts and our feelings,
right? Okay.
And sometimes words are not enough, or just ordinary language is not enough.
Right.
That's where being able to write a poem or read a poem where someone may have been struggling in a similar way, listening to music, right? Songwriting, painting, drawing, scribbling, moving your body, right? Reading a book. You know, even the idea of like mythology, storytelling, having another narrative of what's going on. They talk about the hero's journey. So to be a hero, there has to be obstacles, right?
Right.
And then there's the overcoming of the obstacle. And then there's coming back from that gift, which is the lesson learned with others. So the expressive arts are all those art ways that we can express ourselves and then share it with others. And even, you know, talk about music. Music itself, listening to music, has healing qualities, not only emotionally, but physically, right? There's been a lot of research about that in terms of calming the blood pressure, the heart rate, evoking memory. So these aspects, I think, need to be brought more into helping someone who's having suicidal thoughts. It also forges community.
Okay, so there is so much more we could explore, but we've basically run out of time here. And I want to make sure to tell our listeners about your website, and maybe they could find out more information about these modalities or services or what have you related to our topic. And that's www.holdoncampaign.org. Hold on campaign is all one word, .org. And I want to thank you so much for being on our show.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
I wish we had a lot more time, but we'll have to do it again sometime. And for those listeners who may have tuned in to Pathways late today on KBOO.FM, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of Intuitive Intelligence, a book that shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. Now, don't worry, you can play and or share this interview whenever you want, via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Dr. Diane Kaufman, the founder and director of the Hold On Campaign for Suicide Prevention. And I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo.fm every Sunday morning at 8:30 USA Pacific time. Even better, podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's spelled D-I-V-I KBOOPortlandNation.com, as well as via iTunes, Paulo's YouTube channel, and other free podcast servers. Now, before I officially sign off here, a quick appeal to you, dear listener, to become a member of the KBOO today. KBOO FM has been a staple in our community for over 56 years, and I've been a host on Pathways for 40 years. And it's an auditory meeting place for revolutionaries and creatives alike, bringing grassroots community media to the masses. Help us reach our Catalog of Connections year-end campaign goal of $75,000 so that we can do this for another 56 years. Support independent radio at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. And thank you so much for your support and your contribution. And this is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and Podcasts. And thanks again to Dr. Diane Kaufman and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways Conversation.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch and snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make